You're listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, broadcasting live from the Cultural District in our wonderful, artistic, cloudy, but solar-powered anyway, part of Fairfield. And KRUU is a grassroots community open-source radio station. This is Writers' Voices. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me today is my filmosopher, co-host, guest co-host, Bruce Miller. Bruce, welcome back to Writers' Voices.
Thanks for having me, Monica.
Oh, this is, I knew how much this was up your alley, so when this interview possibility came through, I knew I had the right guy for the job. And also with us today, do you want to introduce our other co-host?
Well, just like you felt that way about me, as soon as this interview was set up, I thought of Marlene Martin.
Thank you, Marlene.
And thanks for coming. Introduce yourself. Tell the folks about what you have going on.
Hi, I'm Marlene Martin. I live here in Fairfield, Iowa, and we have something called Crop Circle Cafe and Gallery. We have a large gallery of aerial crop circle photos taken by professional photographers, and we also have a section on the very solid scientific research and on-site evidence that verify there is a very real phenomenon going on. We have a small section on hoaxing, since some are hoaxed, but the majority, it looks like, are not hoaxed, and the science verifies that. We have a section on the history of crop circles, since they go back as far as recorded history is there, hundreds of years. And we also have a section on interactive experiences. And some ground shots, too, because the ground shots can be as beautiful as the overhead shots.
Where are you? Where is the Crop Circle Cafe?
It's at 402 North B Street here in Fairfield, and we're open every day from 12 to 3.
And our very special guest today on Writers' Voices is Suzanne Taylor, the filmmaker behind the documentary What on Earth Inside the Crop Circle Mystery. Suzanne currently is a crop circle authority in the History Channel series Ancient Aliens. She's the producer and director of What on Earth Inside the Crop Circle Mystery and has been involved with films since she graduated Phi Beta Kappa and summa cum laude from NYU. Originally, she was an actress, but crossed over to the other side of the camera as the executive producer of the feature documentary Crop Circles Quest for Truth. And she's also the founder of Mighty Companions, a nonprofit dedicated to consciousness expansion, and writes the blog Making Sense of These Times. Welcome to Writers' Voices, Suzanne.
Oh, I just feel so at home here. I didn't know Marlene was going to be on the show, and we've been in a lot of communication. I love the idea of what she's doing, and she's supposed to make a video and send it to me. Marlene, where's my video so I can cafe?
We'll do it this weekend. We just finished updating one more section.
We should have a show there, you know. We should have a gala there, show my movie, you know. I'm just so thrilled that you've done this. I could see a whole chain of Crop Circle Cafes. I mean, wouldn't that be more fun than Starbucks?
That's what you're planning on doing.
Well, I'm on your side. Just, you know, include me, obviously. I am included.
Oh, absolutely.
And I also want to thank the Writers' Voices and whatever for that lovely email you sent out, where you're going to interview me about my deeply spiritual documentary. Indeed! I mean, that's why I made this movie. It's not like crop circles are pretty and whatever, which of course they are, but it's because they can affect our consciousness and change the way we this narrow-minded thinking that we're involved in or committed to or destroying ourselves with. So I love the way you framed me.
I definitely copied you on the email because I wanted you to know the type of audience that you are going to be talking to today is the type of audience where you can talk about what these things are really about instead of spending a lot of time, which happens in your documentary. You don't spend a lot of time convincing people that these are not a hoax. Talk about the real value of what's going on in these documentaries, and that's one of the things I love about your film.
Well, I so appreciate it when people so-called get that, because frequently the critique is, well, you didn't prove anything. Well, I wasn't trying to prove anything. And it's, you know, it's somewhat frustrating to be criticized for something I never intended to do, and then when they miss what I really did intend to do, which was to, you know, stimulate people to think differently, to open their minds, to see that the likelihood is that well, of course, we all know the likelihood is that there's lots of life in the universe, and the picture's much bigger than just what we have on Earth here. But indeed, that, you know, the crop circles give so much evidence of that, and so all the enthusiasm of those wonderful characters who've sort of given up their lives for the circles, I mean, that's what I was really delivering. So I so appreciate it when people see what I put on the screen, you know.
Talk about the making of the film. What inspired it? Why did you make it? You know, give us a little brief background on this documentary. Again, what on earth inside the crop circle mystery?
Well, you know, I wasn't a filmmaker before. As you said in the introduction, I was an actress. And so I was very familiar with the world of film. I was married to a producer, director kind type person. And crop circles became an interest of mine out of my interest in consciousness and my awareness that was a spiritual evolution going on, and we were tuning into this great wave of consciousness sweeping through humanity. I was producing a lot of different kinds of programs about methodologies, teachers, things that had to do with spirituality, with consciousness, with self-awareness. It was earlier on, it was more self-awareness. That's how we kind of started in this whole journey that humanity is on. And the crop circles came along in that part of my life just as another subject matter that could, you know, change the way people thought. I saw some pictures of them that were taken by a son of a friend of mine who was stationed in the military in England in the 80s, in the late 80s. And he was taking pictures of what they then were calling landing pads for UFOs. So I saw they were crop circles. And I saw these pictures, and the idea that they were coming from elsewhere, and there was, you know, such good evidence that they were, I thought, oh, this is another subject that could really get people thinking differently. And so I started to actually produce programs about them that were tremendously popular in the late 80s and the early 90s. People were so curious about what was going on. One story is what happened to the crop circles, but then what happened to me was, as I became more and more enthralled and ended up, of course, going to England and becoming a cheerleader for getting attention to the circles, well, how do you really get attention to anything? You make movies. So that's what led me into, you know, becoming a movie maker. That's the long, short story about how I plugged into this whole thing and what I am up to.
You know, one thing I'd like to ask you about is your interview on Rosie O'Donnell. Could you tell us about her positive reaction to your DVD?
Well, this is the best news to come along, maybe ever, because, strangely enough, there are no celebrities that have tuned in to the circles. I find that very astonishing, but that's the way it is, you know. And, of course, celebrities get tremendous attention. In fact, those daytime talk shows, and the nighttime ones, too, the, you know, late-night talk shows, you can't get on them unless you're some kind of weird story in the world, you know, a real occurrence of something bizarre. Or particularly the daytime shows, you have to be in the movie biz. You have to be pop. You have to be, you know, in the pop culture. And So a celebrity is what can, you know, is what your entree can be, and I've never had a celebrity who I could, you know, who I could ride the coattails of. So all of a sudden, here we had Rosie O'Donnell. I was emailed and said she did 10 minutes on your movie, and she said that she gave lots of details about it. She was enthralled by it. She said everybody should watch this movie. Wow. So the next thing that happened was get in touch with Rosie O'Donnell. Her producer got in touch with me, and I went on her show, and we did a long show, you know, like I'm doing with you, all about the circles. And she said, okay, when she gets her TV show on Oprah's network, that she's going to be on, I believe it's going to start in October, she's going to do a show with me about the circles. Well, we've never had anything like that. You know, we've never been exposed to the general public that way. I almost had her going to England with me this summer. We had an itinerary, we were setting it up, and then she said, oh, I just can't do it. I've got to set up my, I'm too busy getting this TV show set up, and so this will not happen. She will not be in England this summer in the circles. But I really look forward to being on her show, and you know, just the power of a celebrity. She's on Sirius Radio, and I don't know anything about their audience. Don't know, but obviously they have a large one. And I've got so many orders for DVDs after I did her show. I mean, the power of a celebrity is just wonderful. By the way, if people want to see the trailer and see, they can buy the DVD at cropcirclemovie.com/radio. It's in your announcement on your website. And what you'll get there is a real special treat for your radio audience. You'll get a piece of our bonus material, one of my favorite pieces of our bonus material, if you go to cropcirclemovie.com/radio. So Rosie O'Donnell is very much in my consciousness now. I keep kind of forwarding things to her when I come across something interesting. Edgar Mitchell just emailed me, you know, our sixth man to walk on the moon, and he was responding to the same blog post you responded to, where I had a little say about my thought about the circles, and I was announcing that we're on iTunes, which is, you know, news in my world. We've just gone on iTunes. You put in What on Earth, and it comes up. You can't put in Crop Circles on the search yet. Somehow they haven't got their search right. You have to put the name of the film, which is What on Earth, but then you can get it on iTunes. And so Edgar Mitchell said, oh, great, you know what? I said, Edgar, come on Rosie with me when we get ready. So I'm kind of, you know, getting my sights set and, you know, feeding stuff to her so that she gets her ducks in order for what it is we can present. So I'm very excited about that.
And we are talking to Suzanne Taylor, and she has made the film What on Earth? Inside the Crop Circle Mystery. And one of the wonderful things about this film, Suzanne, is you talk to these very interesting artists, scientists, philosophers, mathematicians, and geometers, which is sort of a new term for me. But I wanted to talk about, or you talk about, some of the folks in the film, starting with John Mack. He was a Pulitzer Prize-winning Harvard professor, and you write on the website, cropcirclemovie.com, that his Glastonbury Symposium, annual Crop Circle Conference, when he spoke there once, it really framed the intelligence for your documentary. Talk about John Mack and how he inspired this film.
So good. You really know what you're talking about. You know what to ask me. This is great. First of all the people in the film are my friends. That's why I called it Inside the Crop Circle Mystery. I'm not peering at it from the outside of wondering what is this phenomenon. I've been so involved in it for so long, and it's a different energy. You know, I'm kind of like sitting there drawing you in to my engagement with these really fascinating people who are like, they're like those people in Third Encounters. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, those people that say, I've got to get there, you know, at the beginning of the movie. Well, these are the people who had to get there to the crop circles with some talent, with some, they're photographers, they're writers, they're geometers, so those are all the people that I have in my movie. There's nobody in my movie who isn't a good friend of mine. I knew the most interesting people because I'm involved in the whole thing, and the ones who had the good stories to tell. So that's who you see in my movie, and that includes John Mack. And I have in the movie some clips from probably the best talk I've ever heard about the circles, and it was the talk he gave at this major event they have every year called the Glastonbury Symposium over in England. And it's the real focal point of the crop circle season each year. And each year they have someone, a guest speaker, you might say, who is kind of the star speaker, who's some star from a related phenomenon or some something that is in the kind of larger world of unidentified reality that's going on. And John Mack was the speaker that year. I think it was 2005. He, of course, is a world-renowned figure who was the head of the psychiatry department at Harvard University. And what had happened for him was that he did a study on people who said they had been abducted. And what he was looking for as a psychiatrist was pathology. What was wrong with these people? So, I mean, that was his intention. However, when he did his study, he discovered there was nothing wrong with these people. And that got him really intrigued. What was going on? Why were these comparable, similar stories that people who didn't know each other were telling same elements? So something, what was that? Well, that got him into a very serious involvement with the whole abduction phenomenon, I guess you would call it. And he wrote a best-selling book called Abduction. And it was at the top of the New York Times bestseller list right when Harvard was trying to kick him out. Harvard was not too thrilled about this. And there was a long court battle. They couldn't. He had tenure or, you know, whatever. He proved his case that for whatever those reasons in academia, they did not kick him out. He went on to write another wonderful book called Passport to the Cosmos, which is very philosophical, and I love that book. It's one of my favorite books. Abduction was case histories, kind of, also a wonderful book. And so he was the speaker that was brought over in 2005. He knew nothing about the crop circles. And I may have my years wrong. It might have been 2004, but anyway, whatever. So he came over a couple of weeks before he was to give the speech, and he was taken, of course, into the circles. I mean, let's look firsthand at, you know, what it is he's over there for. And he was really blown away. The last line in my movie is his. It's a voiceover. It says, it's the most extraordinary crossover from the other dimension in the history of the human race. So you see what he came to believe. And he's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. Prior, I think, even to his involvement with the abductees, he wrote a biography of Lawrence of Arabia and got a Pulitzer Prize for it. I mean, this guy's no slouch, you know. He's got all the kind of credentials that we look to for our authorities in the world. So his coming along and becoming enamored of the circles was like, oh, my gosh. It's like Rosie O'Donnell in her universe. We had somebody from academia, somebody scientist with credentials, yet another huge opening to the world for the phenomenon. But, of course, what happened to him, a couple of weeks after he gave the speech, he was killed by a drunk driver in England. He was crossing a street, and drunk driver went to jail for hitting him. So, I mean, that's just, you know, in terms of the loss of the opportunity for the crop circles, but we would say even much more than that. He was an incredible human being. The accolades that poured in when he died and that are all on his website, they've, you know, archived them all, including mine, and they just attested to how beloved this man was, how appreciated he was, how and then I can just attest personally to what a lovely human being he was. He was just the nicest man. In fact, I'll tell you one more little story about him and me. The first movie that I was the executive producer on, Crop Circles Quest for Truth, I can't remember if you mentioned that in the introduction, but that was where I hopped into the movie world, and it came out in 2002. I was not the filmmaker, which I am on What on Earth. I was producing a lot of events that had to do with consciousness. And the night before I was to leave for England in 2001, which is the year we shot the movie that came out in 2002, the night before, I was offered an event for me to produce the night before I was to leave for this 10-week shoot. Now, you know how crazy you are the night before you're going to leave for 10 weeks. I've never left for 10 weeks. I have a house. I have pets. I have plants. You know, oh, my gosh, leaving, I mean, clothes and arrangements, and now I'm producing a movie, so I have all kinds of production aspects to deal with. But I'm offered this event to produce a fundraiser for John Mack the night before I was to leave. Oh, my. I mean, I would, for anything else or most things, whatever, I would have just said, no, I can't do that. I mean, I can't possibly do that. Well, I said yes. You know, how could I not have John Mack in my living room? It was a fundraiser at my home. I have a lovely home in Los Angeles at which I do a lot of events. And so that was when I first met John Mack in 2001, doing the fundraiser for his Center for Psychological Change or some such. I can't remember what the name of it. But he had a lot of different kinds of projects that all had to do with consciousness. You know, just right up my alley for everything he was doing. So that was when I met the incredible John Mack. And so as the rest is history, is that what we say?
You're listening to Writers' Voices on KRUULP. My name is Bruce Miller. I'm sitting in for Monica Hadley. And with me in the studio is Marlene Martin, and she owns the Crop Circle Cafe. And we're talking with Suzanne Taylor, who made the documentary What on Earth? Inside the Crop Circle Mystery.
One thing, Suzanne, that I love so much about your film is that you spend so much time dealing with the interactive, very personal experiences people have had with the crop circle phenomenon, which verifies that there is an intelligence behind the making of these and that there's an interactive element with the people who come to visit and research them. Can you talk about a few of those?
And you know, some of the things that happen in crop circles are quite, you might say, unbelievable to, you know, our ordinary mind. Me too. You know, it's like, what? People meditate and think of a shape, and the next day it's in the field. What? You know, and even more extraordinary than that, or I don't know, equally extraordinary. And the criteria that I used, because the crop circle world is full of that kind of lore, and the criteria that I, the method that I used for what I would include in my film was only the stories that were that where the people I was talking to, who were my friends, who were deeply involved in the phenomenon, had been involved in. It was their meditation or it was their experience that was so beyond the beyond that they were involved in, that they were telling me about, that, you know, became subject matter for the film. And at least I knew that I wasn't dealing with third-hand information. So-and-so told me that such-and-such happened. No. When I was in that crop circle, this is what happened to me, you know. And those are the stories that I included. So at least I had my kind of gateway for what it is I would put in there. And I could stand on the authority of the accuracy of what I was being told, because I trust these people. So those are all this, you know, and some of the stories are bizarre. They just are. You say, what? Could that have happened? Well, I certainly believe that they did happen because I do trust those people.
The crop circles themselves, and I had this experience. We have the First Friday's Art Walk here in Fairfield, and it's a beautiful, wonderful event with lots of art, artists. And I'm walking around a few months back, looking at this wonderful art, and then I go into Marlene's Crop Circle Cafe, and you look at the geometry and the sheer beauty and the symmetry of these. And I really don't like the word crop circles. You know, pictograms.
Oh yeah, that was an old name when they were all circular, and that I'm interrupting you, but the minute they came out with that, right when they came out with that, because it had all been circular, we got our first straight line. We talk about that in the movie. It's like they wink at us. Different ways you sort of try to catch them or even not try to do anything. You're just moving along doing what you do, and all of a sudden they fool you with something, you know. So that was
spectacular artwork. I mean, and this, it calls to me, and I think that's one of the things that you learn, people, and one of the things that you cover very well in the documentary, people want to figure things out. Their mind has become separate, and I think it's Janet Osbard, is that her name, from the Netherlands?
She's a big researcher from the Netherlands.
She was amazing, talking about the separation of the mind and the heart, and then how one of the things that crop circles are helping us is to bring the unity back that has been separated, and I just feel this calling. I really resonate with this artwork, and I think it's indescribable for a lot of us to try to talk about what that is all about. And you cover that very well with the with these folks that you have in the documentary.
Well, you know, when you get into being steeped in the crop circle lore, you get these kind of tracks, you might say, of or aspects of it all that you sort of roll around in your mind until you see that this kind of unified, coordinated kind of picture they are presenting. These words are not quite right, but things like, for instance, they separate different things, but when you put them together, you see, oh, what an interesting picture this makes of how they are calling us to a different understanding. For instance, they land, I actually don't even do that. You can only do so much in a film. You can't say everything that there is about everything, and we never even did mention this in the movie, which is that wherever they are all over the world, and they are in 40 different countries, they obviously concentrated in England. That's where you can study them because you know they'll be there every year, and they kind of scatter in these other countries. They're just, you know, they happen to show up. But wherever they do land, all over the world, they land right near ancient, we could call them, let's say, sacred sites, ancient kind of things. Like in America, they'll typically land near Indian burial grounds, or we have these mounds that we can't account for, pyramid-y kind of things that go way back into antiquity. That's where they will typically land in the United States. And in England, in this little area where they concentrate, you can hardly turn around without falling over something ancient. It's an ancient, manipulated landscape. Humans have been there for thousands of years doing sacred ceremony in this area of the world, and Stonehenge being, you know, the most famous of the edifices and monuments and, you know, remains that are left. But as I say, you can hardly turn around without falling over something else. There are hundreds of stone circles, and maybe even thousands in the British Isles. There are tumuli, there are burial chambers, there are, you know, it is replete with antiquity that has some sense of sacredness about it. And so, look, this is where the crop circles land, and they land very specifically near the particular edifices. And they point at them when they have a direction to them, or they'll point right at the middle of them, or they'll point right at the side, like Silbury Hill. They'll point right to the side, we call it a tangent, right to the side of it. They're not random. I mean, it's like this has been thought through by whoever it is that's delivering them to, you know, you might say, to give us this kind of message. And you know, where are they? They're in our grain crops. Now, I want to amend that and tell you that all over the world and the history of the phenomenon, they have been in virtually everything that grows, strawberries, string beans, rice paddies, whatever. But in England, where they concentrate, they're all in the grain, in our grain crops. This is elemental. This is what we are made of.
The DNA of creation is what they're showing us.
Yeah.
How we go from to wave to a form.
Well, indeed. I mean, I think they're just calling us into this kind of attunement to our to being part of nature, to us being nature, as opposed to that split. You're talking about Janet, and she talks about that, the separation of mind and heart, of mind, yes, mind and heart, but we've also got, you know, technology, science has taken over, spirit is marginalized. Well, I think they're calling us to this unification again, to this more elemental time when we were more appreciative of the sacred nature of existence.
And that's why I recommend to our listeners this film, because this is far more than just about crop circles. It is about the unification of what has been separate. Ultimately, some people will tell you that all suffering comes from the sense that we're separated from source. And this is one of the great examples that you see in this film, is the unification. And they go to many steps. They talk about sacred geometry and about squaring the circle.
Yes, I was going to mention that. That's another of those tracks in which we are being presented that same idea of this unification, where shall I speak a little about squaring the circle?
I was going to ask you about squaring the circle, and it's great that Michael Glickman, who Marlene Martin turned me on to in one of her shows over at Crop Circle Cafe, who was an architect who was called to do this, he explains it briefly in your film, but talk about square the circle.
Yeah, Michael was, by the way, a professor of architecture at USC, so, you know, he's no slouch either, and he's a brilliant geometer.
He's amazing.
We have a sequence about squaring the circle. He's in it, and there are other people also who have done some extraordinary work. Squaring the circle is an ancient idea that geometers have puzzled over for millennia, where in a geometric construction, the perimeter of a circle and a square are equal. So if you, you know, go around the circle and go around the square, you've got the same length. And it's called squaring the circle. And if they if it is the function, the product of a geometric construction, in the history of geometry, there were a few examples of that, because it's been a kind of a puzzle thing that geometers have been fascinated by, how to create these constructions so that indeed they do square the circle. You know, the famous Leonardo man, he's standing inside a square and a circle. That's kind of the idea of that. If you opened up both of those things, well, I'm not even sure that's true. I think that they always point to that as actually, I never opened it up and looked at it. But anyway, that's kind of the idea, that you're dealing with a square and a circle that are the same, essentially. And so this geometer who works with Michael, who is actually a protege of Michael Glickman's, his name is Alan Brown.
The quintuplets.
Yes.
All those quintuplet formations.
He went back a few years ago in the mid, I was in like 2006 or so maybe, and he went back and looked at the formations that had come in much earlier, particularly in the 80s, I think, where the predominant formation that would come in over and over again was like the five spot on the dice, but always different. The center circle was bigger or smaller. The four satellites around it were in different proportions to it. Sometimes they had rings around the satellites, whatever. But they were basically your five spot on your dice. Never the same, because circles are never repeat themselves exactly. But there were all different variations on that, and a lot of them had come in. And so Alan Brown decided he would investigate, you know, what was... Were they possibly? He was intrigued at the idea that they might be squaring the circle, and he did the geometric analysis on them and discovered they all squared the circle. And it was like all of a sudden, from the history of, you know, the literature that you could find about geometry, there were half a dozen examples of squaring the circle. All of a sudden, from the crop circle phenomenon, he had 50 of them. Now, the reason we've gone into the geometry of it, but we haven't gone into the idea of it, which is the corresponding philosophical idea is that the square typically is used to represent Earth, and the circle typically is used to represent heaven. So here we have geometry in the crop circles making equalizing heaven and earth, bringing us back into geometrically showing us the balance between heaven and earth. Well, is that sweet or what?
it's more than sweet, Suzanne. It's unification. It's unity. And as Alan Brown says, the power is not as a math tool, but as a symbolic nature.
Absolutely.
He said, to
right.
the sacred geometer, the problem was never about finding an absolute solution. It was about the unification of the square, which is symbolic of the material, or the earthly, as you just said, and the circle, which is symbolic of the spiritual.
That's actually my voice. You know, the soundtrack, you have quoted it exactly.
Well, I took notes watching this film.
But the reason why he says, and we again didn't go, you can't do everything in the film. So the reason why he says it was never about finding the exact whatever, and the reason he says that is you can't do it exactly. You can only do it within, you know, tenths of a percent, whatever. And that's why the geometers, I guess, were so intrigued by it. They were always trying to get it to come out so that it would be exact, and then it was finally proved that it couldn't be exact. But obviously, when you're dealing with doing geometry, with creating geometric formations that give you the almost of it, you have what you would call squaring the circle, and you have your symbolic representation of the unification of Earth and heaven in the crop circle phenomenon.
That's what's beautiful about it. You are listening to Writers' Voices. This is Bruce Miller. I'm sitting in for Monica Hadley, and in the studio with me is Marlene Martin, and she owns Crop Circle Cafe. And today we're talking with Suzanne Taylor, and she has made the film What on Earth? Inside the Crop Circle Mystery. And mystery is a great word, as we're talking about these geometric solutions, but the idea is not so much, finding out the absolute answer, but it is about the mystery, about unification. And you had Barbara Lamb is in this movie, and she talks about the crop circles opens us up to the great mystery. And on your website, cropcirclemovie.com, you have a quote from Ken Kesey, which says, "The need for mystery is greater than the need for an answer." And personally, I've been real involved with the Oneness Blessing Community and Sri Bhagavan. One of his latest teachings are, quote, "The awakened one lives in the mystery that life is. The unawakened one tries to understand what life is." And you cover this so well in your documentary about people trying to explain to the scientists that want to have this, you know, the fact. They want 1 + 1 = 2. And the mystery has been lost, and that's being brought back, which is one of the things these crop circles are helping to do.
Well, we're obviously so stuck in the objective science materialistic paradigm. You know, if you can't, if it can't be subject to the rules of science, where you take things apart, put things together, replicate things, it doesn't exist. And of course, that leaves out consciousness. You know all this. It leaves out love. It leaves out, you know, all the things that are meaningful to us are not the world of science, and not that they should be, or be. Maybe they will be someday. Maybe science will be able to penetrate those mysteries with its parameters. But the point, the difficulty being that we go by science, and everything else has become less significant in our world, so that the things that even we might say are the most important to us are less significant in the value system that we live by. And this is, of course, what's, causing us these horrible challenges on Earth that from my point of view, or the way it looks to me is that we'll never solve these things with the current state of our worldview, where money is the object.
Sounds like Einstein.
It is marginalized. We've got to get a different perspective on our values, and then we can really grapple with some of these things that global warming, all of these things. You know, if you're looking for profit, these things aren't. That's not the best way to solve these problems. And in fact, they're probably unsolvable when you've got this kind of perspective on them. So, this is not just idle chatter about the difficulties we're in, or the possibility of something like the crop circles shaking us up enough to change our worldview. I mean, to me, this is like life or death at some level. It's a very serious matter, we are in great difficulty, and unless we get something that shakes up the way we are tightly geared in the worldview we hold, we're really in great peril. I mean, have we ever thought that we could annihilate the human race before? Whoa!
One thing that I think is very exciting in your film, Suzanne, is the fact that you do touch on the possibility that these are being made by an intelligence that's non-human. Now, is that necessarily ET? Is it necessarily more interdimensional? Who knows? But one of my jokes is that the crop circles are a grassroots way of saying, hello, you're not alone.
Well, we do have no way to identify where they come from. We have science fiction, but we've never really identified anything that can function like us, you might say. It's all just, speculation, and, the logical speculation is ET, but who knows?
Part of the mystery.
You don't even have words to describe what it might be, other than it is a corroboration that there is other intelligence in the universe, wherever it's coming from, and merely knowing that, you don't need to shake the hand of an ET to establish the fact that there is other intelligence. You just have to look at the evidence that other intelligence leaves. And once we understand, sometimes people say, well, so what? We got enough stuff on Earth here. Who cares about what else? Except that once we understand there is other intelligence, for sure, it's in headlines. Contact has been established. Everyone's mind changes. Everyone is all of a sudden alert and awake and open and curious, and you wouldn't be able to go about your daily business the way you had gone about it before you discovered that we are being engaged by something else, everyone would be thinking about that. Everyone would be wondering about that. We, as humanity, would be in relation to something outside ourselves. Right now, it's just each other, so we are so free to be violent with each other, to hurt the earth. But once we're in relation to something other than ourselves, and something that's beyond us, actually, we would be humbled in that relationship, because they're visiting us, we're not visiting them. And we would sort of take our place in a much larger system, which would be so good for us. You know, psychologically, this would be incredibly good for us. It would really set us on a whole different track of experiencing ourselves and what life is all about and how we relate to the larger universe. This would be the best thing that could happen to us. And it's frustrating, in light of that, it's frustrating that the world is so skeptical, that these little narrow little science-based minds. I'm not dissing science. Science is great. It's just great for what it's great at. And these people who are so attached to it, or this civilization that's so attached to it, that turns its back on what could be so life-giving, is so, this is what's so frustrating and why I make these movies, you know, just to open people's minds to a different way to see things, which would be, you know, the fact that it could be so helpful to us, and that it is still ignored and marginalized, you know, for people like ourselves. You know, this is so frustrating, you know, it's so obvious, and yet, what do we do? The world, the gears are so meshed in the way it is, you know. So I'm, you know, I've got my little soapbox here. This is my movie is my ticket, you know, to be able to have these conversations and, you know, try to influence people to think differently and not to convince them of anything. I mean, just look at it's not like people should believe me, you know. This is the way it is. No. We look at the evidence in the crop circle world, and the evidence is we're not making them. So, you know, then you have to open your mind if you're really going to get serious about even science. You know, we have our evidence from science. We've taken this material into the laboratory. We have peer-reviewed papers that have appeared in science journals that attest to the fact that we can't account for these things, that it's not human-made. So, you know, if we took those things seriously, our world would change. And, you know, I'm on my soapbox here to say, hey, pay attention.
Well, there's a lot of folks here that will resonate with what you're saying and resonate with your film, What on Earth Inside the Crop Circle Mystery. But you were talking about the scientific world, and it reminded me of Michael Glickman in the movie, and he said, one of my greatest blessings was not raised as a scientist.
I know, it's like giving sort of the jokes in the movie. He's got such a wink in his eye.
Oh, he's so funny. He's fantastic. And I saw Marlene Martin that year at Crop Circle Cafes when I first got turned on to him, and he doesn't look like he's an architect. He doesn't really care. You know, he's a different sort of a person, but he is very wise.
Oh, very. He's done some of the primary work on the circles, and you know, they're all sort of characters, all these people in my film. And so, you know, sometimes those reviewers who don't get the film, they just talk about these strange people, and you know, like I've done some kind of hippie movie or some such. Oh no.
Well, Andy Thomas, also very prominent in your film, talks about this, why people are hesitant to believe, because it would just blow their mind. And it's safer when somebody says, oh, it's a hoax, and their mind could go back, oh, that's okay, I don't have to think about it.
Exactly. You know, this phenomenon, as I mentioned before, was really such a curiosity to the whole world until the idea of hoaxing became widespread. And before that, boy, everybody was curious. When I was producing the programs that I started to do in the late 80s, the programs were so well attended, I had to go out and get bigger and bigger spaces to hold them. So many people were curious about it. And then, as we show you in the film, kind of the turning point of that was what, you know, anybody who's into crop circles knows about Doug and Dave. In fact, they'll tell you, what, how many, 20 years later, oh, no, those were all made by those two guys, Doug and Dave. No. A press release went out all over the world from these two farmers, and a press release did go out all over the world. But we do a whole, you know, as you know, a section on that in the movie about how ridiculous that claim was. And yet, it gave humanity, you might say, a place to kind of park this outrageous possibility that we were being visited and we could prove it. Oh, no, now we don't have to think about that anymore. That was really, you know, just, I mean, it is mind-blowing, you know. And somehow I think, in the way our minds are, somehow the difficulty we're in is easier to embrace than the unknown. You know, the unknown is scary to us at some fundamental level. And, you know, when we talk about everything changing, well, even though we are in great difficulty in the world, in our little short-term thinking, all of us have things we want to protect. We want to protect our 401ks. You know, it's very natural. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But it kind of shields us from entertaining radical new thoughts, you know. Safer to just kind of keep with the status quo and pray that it works out, you know.
In terms of squaring the circle, one thing that people often bring up when they come to my cafe is the fact that squaring the circle, heaven and earth, has to do perhaps with the unification of heaven on earth, with perhaps contact, with perhaps the fact that when you think of an otherness, it automatically unifies the human race. Then we become one whole instead of divisive elements and the concept of unity in the diversity. And what I do at the cafe is pretty much what you do in your film. I let the stories speak for themselves. I don't need to sell anything. I just take them around the cafe and the stories sell themselves. And so I think it's a very important work what you're doing. It portrays so beautifully all of the different people who are talking about crop circles, what their experiences are, and it really portrays the concept that there are so many very intelligent, thoughtful people committed over time to getting the word out that there is a phenomenon happening that is very important, and it's important because of the implications for the human race. All the possible, as you say, positive things they could have to teach us. And so I think there's an immediacy to the crop circles and the message, at the very least, that you are not alone and we are being engaged in a very friendly, non-threatening way. The crop circles are so big. Some of them are hundreds and hundreds of feet in size, and they're appearing at the rate of 100 to 300 every year all over the world. And there's a very, I think, an urgent sense that this is something to be attended to, because not only are they beautiful, but they're directly engaging us. And so many of your very powerful, very personal interviews portray that we are being engaged with the intelligence behind this. And so your film is just a beautiful portrayal of that.
Well, you know, people appreciate, I get this kind of feedback all the time, that I'm not exactly shoving anything down their throat.
Right.
That was all well said, Marlene. I liked all you said. By the way, the 300, it used to be that many. Now there's more like 110, 120 a year, half in England and half in the rest of the world. And a lot of them hoaxed. We can't ignore that we've got this pariah of hoaxing going on. They're the terrorists of the crop circle world. But, you know, that's not what's important. What's important is that there's a real phenomenon. Now wait a minute, what was I was saying, that people appreciate in the movie that I'm really not insisting that they believe one thing or another. I'm just letting these people speak of their experiences, of their findings, of their whatever. And so many people tell me that they show this movie to skeptical friends or family members or whatever. And I get these emails all the time, and now their minds have changed, or they're open, or, you know, they're just blown away, or, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, the movie was just in New York for a week. It was at the Quad Cinema, and that was a kind of eclectic audience. That was, you know, a movie-going audience of many different kinds of people. And it actually was very exciting to me. We did Q&A after the two evening performances each week, so there were 14 Q&As. Not one person left after the film. They all stayed for the Q&As, and they stayed through the whole thing. Some of them were long until they kicked us out, like the next show was going to start or the theater was closing, and nobody walked out. Well, I go to screenings all the time in L.A., and a lot of time there's a Q&A afterwards, not the commercial ones, but, you know, screenings that they do. And this particular theater is a very friendly theater where they do Q&As. So, for new films that come in. And when I go to these screenings, people, half the audience leaves, you know, and then the rest stay. And I was so thrilled that everybody stayed. And then the reaction was just so, oh, I had no idea, and, you know, a lot of that sort of thing. So it's very gratifying. And then I got a good review in the New York Times. It was like, oh, my God, a miracle. Who sent me that reviewer? Well, she really got the movie. You know, if you want to look up New York Times, I'm sure if you did a search for What on Earth, Crop Circles, mm-hmm. you get to her review. Or you can go on my website. I have a blog called theconversation.org. I've got the review on there. That's where you can sign up for my mailing list as well. Or you can sign up for where you can see the trailer and this one piece of bonus material, which is CropCircleMovie.com/radio. That's especially for your audience so they can see the bonus material. But that New York Times review was like, oh, God, you know, so many people don't get it. They don't get they criticize a different film. I think, oh, why don't you look at my film and criticize it, not tell me what's not in it. But she totally got what I was doing. And the New York Times, I mean, it's the primo place to get a review. So that was very thrilling.
You're listening to Writers' Voices. I'm Bruce Miller in for Monica Hadley, and in the studio with me is Marlene Martin of the Crop Circle Cafe. Where is that locally, Marlene, for folks?
It's here in Fairfield, 402 North B Street, plenty of parking in the back.
Oh, it's beautiful. You should go and see these formations. And we're talking with Suzanne Taylor about her documentary, What on Earth? Inside the Crop Circle Mystery.
I think, Suzanne, the fact that the New York critic reviewed it so well is a testament to how well you put it together.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much, really. Really well.
I agree with that too.
Okay, for her to give it a good review. So.
It doesn't have the strident UFO TV music. Is it real or is it not? You have the really nice, soft music. The editing is really well done. It is a very well made film in and of itself.
I think
we did it like a Hollywood movie. You know, we had somebody compose it who composes film music, and you know, it's not a shabby little video or. I don't want to be disparaging, but a lot of the material that's out there is not really movie material, it's video. But we made a movie, so, you know, I wanted it to be acceptable. I mean, you know, I didn't make it for us. I made it for people who don't know anything about this. I mean, us, we appreciate it, and we, you know, I mean, you can't get enough of the nice things that happen in our world of consciousness and awareness, but I really made this movie to get out to the general public and to change their minds, to open their minds. So I knew I had to make it up to some standards in order to do that, so I did.
You did a fabulous job, and one of the charming elements about it is not only do you have so many interviews with so many fascinating people, but the style is a very conversational style, just like you're sitting down in, you know, someone's living room, having an open heart-to-heart chat with them. It's a beautifully done film. Now, I was showing it to a few of my friends last night. I said, okay, come over to my house. Let's watch this thing. Give me questions you would like to ask her, and I'll ask Suzanne on your behalf. The best question came from Dan, who said, Marlene, ask Suzanne what did not make it into the movie. What things hit the cutting room floor?
Well, I already told you we didn't talk about where they land near sacred sites, but what I really would have loved to have included, but it would have taken too long, it wasn't, you know, something I could do briefly, was that wonderful formation that came in 2001 that was so unique, which was the answer to what we sent out into space in 1976. It's the message, I guess is what they call it. And in 1976, there was a commemorative sort of thing, you know, the way you bury time capsules with everything about your civilization and it should be discovered in millions of years, blah, blah, blah. Well, we did it in radio waves that we sent out into space. We encoded information in binary code. Don't ask me too much. I can only tell you that because, you know, it's not my category. But information was encoded in binary code that was sent out in radio waves. And you can draw that on a piece of paper. It translates to images. So we didn't expect to get an answer. It was commemorating the building of the largest radio telescope in the world in Puerto Rico called Arecibo, or at a place called Arecibo. And it was commemorative. Carl Sagan was the lead designer on it, and you know, just one of those things you do and make a lot of hoopla, whatever. And now, all of a sudden, in 2001, in our crop field near the largest radio telescope in England, this absolute correlation of shape and aspects arrived in a crop field. And as we had sent out information about us, we're carbon-based, we're the inhabited planet in our solar system, we're third planet from the sun, blah, 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 you know, set of information that went out. Well, we got a set of information back. Silicon-based, three inhabited planets, 3 feet tall with big heads. We were, whatever, 5.5 feet tall or whatever. But what? This is an answer in a crop field? And it was. It was extraordinary. I mean, you can find this all over the net. And, in fact, there's a wonderful little video about it that's 7 minutes long. I didn't have 7 minutes for my movie, but one of my allies, Terry Toftenes, who's a filmmaker from Norway, has it on YouTube. And, in fact, again, if you went to my conversation.org blog and you put in a search, I think if you put what would we put in, maybe his name, and it's spelled funny, Terje, T-E-R-J-E, I'm sure that little 7 minute thing would come up. And it's wonderful. You can just see this extraordinary, delightful kind of, in fact, when that thing came in, I said, okay, this is it. The world is going to get it now. There was no intimation of hoaxing about that at all. And, it came in fact, within a couple of weeks after the largest one ever that did get the world's attention. That was the size of 2 football fields. You talk about how big they can be. And the world press came to that. CNN was there. The whole world press covered that because it was so gigantic, you know, so different from everything else. That's what press covers. Things are different. And when this came in, I thought, okay, biggest one ever, now this one, the world will get the whole picture now. It's all going to be, I think I bet everything I owned, actually. Fortunately, nobody kept me to that bet because the world ignored it. And in fact, SETI, which was our search for extraterrestrial intelligence that I think the government was funding at that time, they came out with an announcement or a response. And what they said was, oh, no, if this had been a real response, it would have come back in radio waves, not in a wheat field. Case closed.
Suzanne, I've got to interrupt. We have less than 2 minutes left. We're speaking with Suzanne Taylor on Writer's Voices, and she has made the film What on Earth? Inside the Crop Circle Mystery. How can people get this film?
Well, you go to cropcirclemovie.com/radio. That will get you a particular piece of bonus material that other people won't get if they don't put that slash radio on it. But it's cropcirclemovie.com, and you'll also see the trailer, and you'll be able to buy the DVD. And you can sign up for the mailing list there. I have a wonderful mailing list. I send out not much, but what I send out is really choice.
And we have Marlene Martin in the studio, and she owns Crop Circle Cafe. And give the information about your cafe.
It's 402 North B Street. It covers the whole crop circle phenomenon from the aerial photos, ground photos, research photos that verify it's a real phenomenon, interactive experiences that verify we're interacting with it, and also a big section on the history of crop circles that confirm that this has been going on for way more than just the last few decades. And also, one thing I'd like to add is Suzanne's film is fabulous, and it makes wonderful gifts. For those of you who love crop circles, this will fill in everything you wanted to know, and this is also a great gift for people, for you to give to friends and family who may not know much about it.
Suzanne, thank you very much for joining us today.
What a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Thanks, Suzanne.
Caroline Kilborn, Cheryl Fusco-Johnson, and Corey Hickenbottom.